Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, May 5th, 2016. South Sudan says the UN Security Council is asking too much from the new transitional government of national unity.
We, as a transitional government of national unity, are supposed to be given at least the opportunity to come up first with its plans before you put the cart before the horse. The government is committed to the implementation of the agreement.
And the Episcopal Church of Sudan in South Sudan is helping vulnerable IDPs in Wau State.
The little that we have, we need to share with our community and also with the elders who are not actually able to work, and also those who are not support themselves, especially the orphan, the small young children, and also the widow.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. But we first go to Torit, where the Chinese government has donated 1,000 bags of rice to the newly created South Sudanese state of Imatong. The bags were received yesterday by the mayor of Torit town to help curb severe hunger in the former eastern Equatorial state. Kaltuma Vanessa has more for VOA from Torit.
The governor of Imatong state, Natricia Loluke Mariel, says the rice that was received from Chinese government can help for a short time. Loluke says the state is encouraging the citizen to grow their own food during this rainy season. He says foreign investors will help address food security in the state.
We have a land which we have given to the Israel company, which is going to be like a supervisor in terms of these agriculture activities all over the country. We have given them 120 hectares just next to Kinati River. So this can be something that can be also of a help if, in case there is no rain, of course, they inform me that they will use irrigation. So this is important. But also we have done a program whereby during my moving, I have informed people, whatever the case, that we must cultivate. We must cultivate. Even if we are hungry, let us cultivate.
The mayor of Torit, William Eddie Fontio, says the Chinese donation is not enough to feed the whole state. He says 1,000 bags of rice will be distributed to the vulnerable.
We have selected people who are to be given because there are some families who are staying 4 to 5 days without getting any meal.
Teresa James, a citizen in Torit, says the government should not be selective in addressing hunger in the state. Families in Torit are not able to afford food price in the market.
We heard that the food is going to be given to the old people only. What about the rest of the people? And we need to know how it will be end if all of us get the food. All the people in Torit are hungry. Now, if you don't work and having no money, how will you survive? Even me who's working, I earn £300, which is not enough even to buy food.
Hundreds of people died of hunger and others were forced to leave the country to the neighboring countries to seek for relief food in refugee camps of Kakuma in Kenya and Kiriadongo of Uganda. For VOA News, I am Kaltuma Vanessa in Torit.
From Torit, we move to Wau, where the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan is also distributing food aid to hundreds of vulnerable internally displaced persons in the newly created Wau state. The IDPs fled violence in Farajalla, Ngiza, and Ngodakala areas of Wau County when violence broke out between armed groups and government forces nearly 4 months ago. As Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Wau, the IDPs have not had access to humanitarian assistance for the past 3 months.
300 households of internally displaced persons living in and around Wau town received food donations from the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan. Most of the IDPs the church has selected to help are either disabled, elderly, breastfeeding mothers or widows. They received maize flour, lentils, oil and salt today. Since fleeing homes more than 3 months ago, a majority of the IDPs have been living with relatives or friends in and around Wau town, while others have been staying in open areas including school and church compounds and health centers. The IDP says they have suffered for far too long. Lucia Ilario, a mother of five whose husband was killed when fighting broke out in the area, was among the IDPs who received food aid today. Speaking in Arabic, Ilario says, for the last couple of months, she has found it increasingly difficult to feed her children. Ilario says she never knew today she would get flour, lentils and oil. She says this has made her so happy and thank Jesus Christ for bringing peace so that she can live. 75-year-old Carlo Marjan, speaking in Arabic, says for the last 3 months he ate so little that he developed health problems.
I thank the church and God for making me alive. I'm glad to the priest for giving me food to eat. I have stayed for 3 months without food, weak and suffered from diarrhea. My eyes cannot see.
Amona John is another IDP. Speaking in Arabic, John says the food aid provided by the church is not enough and is calling on the Episcopal Church to do more to feed IDPs.
We receive one sack of maize flour, salt, one jerrycan of oil, and one sack of lentil is distributed between 3 individuals.
Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan officials admit the food aid they are distributing is insufficient, but say it will enable the IDPs to live as they await more food assistance from other aid agencies, including the United Nations World Food Programme. Reverend Samuel Mabith Mabior is in charge of food distribution at the Episcopal Church of Sudan and South Sudan.
We feel that we need to help. So the little that we have, we need to share with our community and also with the elders who are not actually able to work, and also those who are not support themselves, especially the orphan, the small young children, and also the widow. We are able to help, but the problem, we don't have a capacity to help the community.
Aid agencies operating in WAO are assessing the humanitarian needs of the IDPs for both food and non-food items. Yesterday, the special representative of the United Nations Secretary General in South Sudan, Ellen Margaret Loy, said aid workers continue to face obstacles by government and rebel forces as they try to reach hundreds of thousands of South Sudanese in need of humanitarian assistance. Officials say there are some 96,000 IDPs living in WAO state. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in WAO.
The Transitional Government of National Unity, which was sworn in last week, says it is committed to full implementation of the peace agreement. Yesterday, the UN Security Council reminded the Transitional Government of its obligations under the Status of Forces Agreement and called on the new government to allow UNMISS workers freedom of movement to protect civilians and investigate alleged human rights abuses. South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makuyi tells VOA's James Batty the government wants to make the country secure before taking on issues like reconciliation and human rights.
The government of the Republic of South Sudan appreciates the decision of the Security Council in appreciating the establishment of the Transitional Government of National Unity and trying to give it at least clear direction on the way forward. In actual fact, the Transitional Government of National Unity took oath on the 29th of this month, and from then, the Transitional Government of National Unity will meet next Friday to work out its plan of action and chart out the way forward. So at this moment, it is unfortunate that the Security Council has already gone ahead and directing the Transitional Government to do X, Y, Z. I say it is unfortunate because we, as the Transitional Government of National Unity, are supposed to be given at least the opportunity to come up first with its plans before you put the cart before the horse. The government is committed to the implementation of the agreement, and it will ensure, number one, that security is obtained in South Sudan and that everybody is in peace. It is there and then that we can talk of accountability, peace and reconciliation. There is no way you can talk of reconciliation as long as there is no peace in the country, as long as everybody in the country is not feeling secure.
The Security Council did not just do it to put pressure on the National Unity Government, but this was part of the agreement that was signed last year, which includes the creation of a hybrid court to investigate people who might have committed some abuses during the conflict?
Well, unless the Security Council is after accountability and not after peace and stability for South Sudan, then we can say so. But if the Security Council is for peace and peaceful coexistence in South Sudan, then this must first be obtained before you talk about accountability. You cannot talk about the hybrid court. You cannot talk about whatever at a time when you have not yet secured South Sudan. So the number one task of the transitional government of national unity is security. And if the Security Council is of opinion that we put the cart before the horse, then that is very unfortunate.
You know, Minister, it's been almost a week now since the return of your first Vice President, Riek Machar, to Juba, and the formation of the transitional government of national unity. Going into this process, there was some people who felt that it was not going to be possible for you and the rebel group to work together. How has it been since you all came together?
Well, you see, it is unfortunate that there are doubting Thomases who would all the time like to create doubt and create suspicion. Since the coming in of Dr. Riek Machar and took oath as the first vice president of the Republic of South Sudan, there had never been any problem of insecurity. The transitional government of national unity is moving forward, and there is nothing as others had been wishing.
That's South Sudan Information Minister Michael Makwe. He was speaking with VOA's James Batty in Juba earlier this morning. President Salva Kiir has appointed 10 new advisers. One analyst says the appointment violates the peace agreement and is not realistic. But Mr. Kiir's spokesman, Atenyue Kateny, insists the new advisers will help boost service delivery. Waki Simon Wudu reports for VOA from the capital, Juba.
The 10 advisers were appointed through a presidential decree read on state television last night. Prior to last week's formation of the transitional government of national unity, President Kiir had 5 advisers. Presidential spokesman Atenyue Kateny says the decision to increase the number of advisers is a good thing.
The president wanted this time to be a very serious time, that the people of South Sudan, after signing peace agreement and after forming the government of national unity, the challenge is for this government to ensure it delivers services to the people and also to ensure that the security is maintained in the country, as well as returning the economics to normal situation.
The presidential advisors include Tut Keu for security affairs, John Guy for educational affairs, Agretisa Sabuni for economic affairs, and Lawrence Korobandi for legal affairs. Daniel Awet Akot for military affairs, Tor Deng Maiwen, advisor for decentralization and intergovernmental linkages, and former SPLM Secretary General Anne Ito for agriculture and food security. Atenyue says Mr. Kiir appointed the advisors in accordance with the 2011 transitional constitution. SPLM in opposition officials say they are surprised by the move, adding that the August agreement does not give the president the power to appoint additional advisors in the transitional government of national unity. A legal expert, Ajon Noel Julius, says Mr. Kiir's decision to appoint the advisors contradicts the peace agreement, which is the basis for the recently formed transitional government of national unity.
If you look at the structure within which the transitional government is established as per the agreement for the resolution of conflict in South Sudan, if you look at Chapter 1, Article 4, it doesn't give any room for presidential advisors. I think if you go by the peace agreement, then we would say that the appointed 10 presidential advisors does not have a space within the agreement as it is assigned.
But Atenyue argues the transitional constitution is still the country's paramount supreme law, and therefore Mr. Kiir has the right to make decisions based on the powers vested in him by the constitution. Article 8 of the agreement, however, stipulates that the agreement is supreme and will take precedence over any state or national law. Julius says the president's decision will further impact implementation of the peace agreement.
We're taking a step back. It means as we are hopeful of propelling forward, this is another hurdle that we need to overcome. We already know we have a number of things that we need to overcome. The 28 states, they're working on the speaker. People have to work on boundaries of the states that were created, if any, if they will stand. Again, now we have another issue of, presidential advisors.
And Julia says the decision is not realistic considering the current economic crisis in the country, pointing out that more advisors means more cars, offices and support staff, which the country can ill afford. For VOA News, I am Wake Simon Wudo in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Ugandan government gives strong warning to journalists. Find out why when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today.
What's your biggest weakness?
I like to see the best in people. It's like if someone comes to me and says this person's like a very bad person, I won't believe it. I like to see the best in everyone.
My biggest weakness is being shy. I'm always shy when it comes to maybe strangers. When I don't get used to people a lot, that's the big problem.
I think I'm lazy and I see it as my biggest weakness. This is because I don't like doing so many things at once.
It's to the other gender, women.
I'm easily provoked. You know, sometimes when someone does something wrong to me, then it makes me feel bad or it makes me feel angry.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus. Uganda's government says journalists covering the campaign of opposition leader Kizza Besigye will lose their licenses and could face arrest. Besigye, who remained under house arrest, called for protests today to demand an audit of the results of the February presidential poll, which saw long-term president Yoweri Museveni elected to a fifth term. Elizabeth Pollard has more from Kampala.
Thursday was supposed to be a day of protest for the FDC officials and supporters who are demanding an independent audit of the results of the February presidential poll. However, heavy police presence kept people off the streets. Opposition leader and presidential candidate Kizza Besigye remains under house arrest. The Inspector General of Police and the Information Minister held a press conference Thursday to announce that the media is banned from covering what the government is calling the FDC's defiance campaign. They said journalists are prohibited from airing live broadcasts of FDC events, covering their press conferences, or inviting FDC members on talk shows. Robert Sampala, the national coordinator with the Human Rights Network for Journalists in Uganda, says this is a worrying sign.
The profession is very clear about balancing our stories, about giving a fair platform to those in power and those outside of power that have alternative views. This is what the media is all about. So now you're detuning the media only to crusade for the government and government policies. That is not what the media is supposed to do.
The government says it must preserve stability and security. But Sampala says advocacy groups are considering challenging the media restrictions in court.
We've seen journalists being arrested before, even without this ban. So it's going to be just a continuation of the further crackdown. They will devise any means to scare the media, mm-hmm. to intimidate the journalists and harass those that are strong-willed.
Social media has not been shut down as it was during the vote in February, but an official with the Ugandan Communications Commission says it will be monitored for those promoting the FDC. Last week, Deputy Chief Justice Stephen Karuma banned all FDC activities for 1 month. These included the FDC's weekly prayers, which on Tuesday were interrupted by police, who then arrested several participants. Elizabeth Pola for VOA News, Kampala.
Angola is battling a yellow fever outbreak amid a global shortage of the vaccine. Cases have also been reported in the Democratic Republic of Congo, Kenya, Uganda, and China. Health officials worry about further spread as there is no treatment. Mass vaccination is the only way to stop yellow fever. But as Jennifer Luzuta reports from Dakar, producing more of the vaccine is not easy.
The Institut Pasteur de Dakar is one of four places in the world that make the yellow fever vaccine. Recording is prohibited inside the institute, but there is nothing to hear. The halls are quiet. Two walls of windows separate us from sterile labs, where technicians work in head-to-toe protective gear. Each week, a carton of special pathogen-free chicken eggs arrives from Germany. Technicians inject the embryos one by one with the live virus. That's a first step. What follows is weeks of extraction, mixing, incubation, and safety checks. It can take up to 6 months to produce a batch of usable vaccine. Globally, around 80 million doses of yellow fever vaccine are made each year. The Institut Pasteur can produce up to 10 million doses. Antoine Marie Diatta is the quality control manager for yellow fever vaccine production at the Institute. He says, unfortunately, our production capacity can't always meet the global needs. It's the same for other manufacturers, he says. This can be a problem when there is an epidemic, he says, because then there is an immediate need to vaccinate a large number of people. It can be hard to predict how much vaccine will be needed. Yellow fever vaccines can be stored for up to 3 years, but manufacturers can't afford to overproduce, as Diatta explains.
Le stockage du vaccin pour le producteur, c'est pas intéressant.
He says money is invested to make each batch a vaccine, and you must wait for your return. It's not easy. He says while you wait to sell, you still need to pay salaries and update equipment, but your money is tied up. Yellow fever is endemic to 34 countries in Africa. It is spread through the bite of an infected mosquito. A single dose of the vaccine can protect you for life. UNICEF's chief of child survival and development in Angola, Samson Agbo, says 80% of people living in high-risk areas need to be vaccinated to prevent an epidemic. In many parts of Africa, immunization rates are below 60%.
The high-risk countries are known. Ideally, those high-risk countries should have very strong immunization programs, which means you're reaching every child. We need to invest more, and we want to prevent reoccurrence like this kind of outbreak.
Nearly 2,000 cases have been reported in Angola since the outbreak began in October 2015. A mass vaccination campaign was launched in February, using 6 million doses from emergency stockpiles. An additional 10 million doses were made available by the International Coordinating Group on Vaccine Provision and UNICEF in late March. While this has slowed the spread of the virus, the World Health Organization warns that if the outbreak spreads to other countries, the now depleted stockpiles could impact routine vaccination campaigns, putting millions more at risk. Tariq Jasarovic is a spokesperson for the WHO.
What we really need to do is to make sure that there is enough of funds and that we work with manufacturers to see how the production can be increased. We already hear from some manufacturers that they can increase the production. We have replenished now our stockpile, but again, we just hope that we may contain this outbreak in Angola, so there would be no need for additional doses that we may not have.
Three other labs in the world produce yellow fever vaccine. They are Russia, France, and Brazil. The Institut Pasteur says plans are underway to open a new facility on the outskirts of Dakar by 2020 to increase production here. Jennifer Lazuda for VOA News, Dakar.
In Kenya, poetry and spoken word have become a popular means for addressing everything from love to political violence. Lenny Rovaga in Nairobi reports from the monthly open mic night at Kwani Trust, a 13-year-old literary network that brings together some of the brightest voices on the continent.
By day, 24-year-old Sam Muremi is the quintessential entrepreneur. He and his sister run a bakery out of their home. He mixes the flour and baking powder to make a thick paste. But pastries are not his only passion. He writes poems during his breaks. And by night, he takes to the stage under his alter ego, X.
Ubuntu, you are here in this box, this reality. It has become your ball and chain.
Muremi has been performing his verses around Nairobi for the past 4 years. It's an art form known here as floetry, poetry with rhythm. Muremi tackles love and politics.
Poetry transcends boundaries because the human experience is the same, different variations. And poetry captures these variations and is what is used to connect us as a people.
There are now open mic nights around Nairobi for floets like Muremi. Ayub Kairigo, who goes by the moniker Flo Flani, has been a poet for more than 5 years.
The drum rolls are calling me home. The drum rolls are calling me home. See, I wanna pack my bags and go back in time. Sometimes I come out and the stars are bright. It's I in my truest form under God's chandelier. In my mind, I go back in time when we sat around the fireplace with Buka and Shosho, the college of knowledge.
Fans say they love the performer's no-holds-barred approach.
No topic is off-limit. You can say anything from sexuality. You can tell anything from political, anything from social justice, anything cultural. You can say it. There's nothing that's limited in poetry.
The Kwani Trust hosts this monthly open mic night. Acclaimed Kenyan writer Binyavanga Wainaina was a founder of the Kwani Trust in 2003. It has since drawn other contemporary literary giants like Nigerian author Chimamanda Ngozi Adichie. The group's goal is to develop writers and give them a creative space to present and publish work. Angela Washuka is the executive director.
We see ourselves as a site for public memory. When the post-election violence happened several years ago, for example, we produced quite a lot of work interrogating the beginning ideas of this, interrogating the idea that there are certain cultures or certain tribes or certain identities that are more legitimate than others, interrogating the idea of that we're one national body, which is not something that we find to be healthy in any realm when it comes to creative expression.
The open mic nights are a chance to explore and challenge society.
Where do souls go when they die? I like to believe they take to the skies like stars, looking down on us, not condescendingly, but rather after us, fragile, this way up.
X says if he is an artist, then the audience is his canvas. Lenny Ruvaga for VOA News, Nairobi.
And here is a recap of today's top stories with South Sudan in Focus editor Carol Van Damme.
Thanks, John. China donated 1,000 bags of rice to the newly created South Sudanese state of Imatong. The bags were received yesterday by the mayor of Torit Town to help curb severe hunger there. The governor of Imatong state says the rice received from China will help for only a short time. The state is encouraging citizens to grow their own food during the rainy season. The Episcopal Church of Sudan in South Sudan is distributing food aid to hundreds of vulnerable internally displaced persons in the newly created Wau state. The IDPs fled violence in Farajela, Ningiza areas of Wau County when violence broke out between an armed group and government forces nearly 4 months ago. And finally, President Kiir has appointed 10 new advisors. The advisors include former Deputy Speaker of the National Legislative Assembly, Daniel Awet Akot, for military affairs, and Tor Deng Mawain, the advisor for decentralization. The 10 advisors were appointed through a presidential decree read on state television last night. And that's a look at today's top stories. I'm Carol Van Damme.
That's our show for this Thursday. We now leave you with the Congolese music star Koffi Olomide with a remix of his single Selfie.
True to Roba.
Amigo. Amigo.
Billy Carlos.
Amigo. Video a copina te.
Amore
copina te.
Amore copina te.
Ah, je suis Seigneur.
C'est bien.
François Ndengue.
Hey, amigo. Amigo.
Il a le bistopé.
Ouais.
Hey.
Allez, d'accord.
Vincent Gomez.
Chuma, allez, chuma, chuma.
Yeah. Ah.
Ndengue le bistopé.
Hey. Allez, d'accord.
Chuma, chuma.
Yeah, comme il y a le bistopé.
That's a test of Koffi Olomide's remix of Selfie. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for listening. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.
Selfie.